Do you like your gift? The star, you could have got a rain check on me later, Tim. You should have just had your sister and her family keep on. That was really beautiful. Well, greetings in Jesus' name. Thanks for the opportunity to be back. When I come back to Wilmersdorf, it always feels like I'm back home. And Wilmersdorf has had a very significant part in my life journey and story. And when I drive these streets and see many of you folks here, there's a very warm place in my heart. And so thanks for the opportunity to share this morning with you. I brought something along from South Carolina here. And can anyone tell me what this is? It's a stick, right? But when you look closer, what kind of stick is it? Can some of you see? What is that? You got it up here. I see you mouthing it. What is it? Okay, what kind? Yeah, maybe birch. Actually, it's probably birch. And what's been done to this thing? Can you see the ends of it? What is it? Back there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's carved by what? Some kind of animal, right? What is it? Yeah, it's a beaver chew. It's a beaver chew. And there's lots of beaver chews down there in the woods where we are. We got beavers around. But let me tell you a story about this beaver chew, because there's lots of beaver chews, but this beaver chew is not just any ordinary beaver chew. This beaver chew comes from a little boy named Billy. And Billy actually lives near the camp. He lives out in the mountains, and when you go to Billy's house, you go up into the mountains, typically from camp if you've ever been there. We always go the other way in South Carolina. We're right in the corner. But for Billy, I would turn left, and I went back into the mountains. And when you go to Billy's house, you go north into the mountains and you turn down a road and then you turn onto another road. And when you get on that road, it says dead end. And you drive on that road a while and then you turn onto another road. And on that road, it says no outlet. So it means you're like at the end of the road. And so you go down that road. It's an old gravel dirt road. And it's potholy, and eventually you come to another little sign that says, end of county maintenance. And after that, the road gets worse, and you go into this little hollow, and there is Billy's home. It sits in a little ravine. So one day I went out to visit Billy. This is about now, it's probably more than a year ago. I went out to visit Billy, and Billy and his grandma lived there, and Billy took me up into the mountains. He always talked about this little pond, but I hadn't seen this little pond he had. So we walked up this ravine into the mountain, and we're there at this little pond. We walk up to this pond. It's maybe an acre. And at the edge of this pond is this little boat. And the boat, I looked at this boat, and the boat is full of water. And so we're there just kind of playing around. I was just there spending time with Billy. And Billy's a quiet little boy, and spending time with him. And all at once, Billy gets this little ice cream bucket. And it's a really little boat. And he starts dipping water out of the boat with an ice cream bucket. And I'm like, Billy, we're not going to go in there. This boat is going to sink. Like, it's full of water. And I'm looking at the boat, and all at once I realize that the boat is more full of water. The water level in the boat's higher than the lake or the pond. So I'm like, okay, it's just full of rainwater. It got that full. So I joined him, and we dipped out water, till we got most of the water out with our little buckets, and we got in this little boat. It just so held me and Billy, and we paddled out into the pond. And as we're paddling along, all at once, Billy looks up in a tree, and he's just looking in the tree. It's just branches just above us a little. And I'm like, Billy, what's up in the branch? And he said, my daddy's fishing lure used to be up there. I'm like, oh, okay, and so then, but it wasn't there anymore. So we paddled on a little longer, back around the lake, and there was this old soda bottle along the bank, mostly covered with leaves. And Billy said, that was my daddy's soda bottle. And we kind of went on that way. I don't know how long we were up there. We went to leave, and Billy's just looking around. He's just looking around, and I'm like, I'm not saying anything, I'm just watching. Billy, what's Billy looking for? So he's looking, and he pulls this up out of the leaves, and he says, here, Chief Phil, this is for you, Chief Phil. And he gave me this beaver chew. It's just a beaver chew. But I took that beaver chew home, and I set it on my hearth, and I've always had that beaver chew. But looking at Billy, I want to tell you a little more about Billy's life. Billy grew up in a very broken home. And Billy's father at Christmas, I think it's 4 years ago now, right before Christmas, Billy's father was killed. He was murdered. He got in a fight right near the little town of Westminster where I live. And for Billy, Dad is never coming home again. So those things Billy told me, they were still memories of a father who Billy did a lot of things with. And I remember one night, Lisa and I went out to their home, and Grandma told us the story of the day that she found out that Billy's father, her son, was killed, and she told us the details. I mean, we were sitting here, we were eating this, we were every minute detail. This morning, for most of us, we don't have a story quite like Billy, but we are faced with pain, we are faced with loss, brokenness. It's in the world around us. We heard the good news of Jesus this morning, but even in our own hearts, our own families, there is brokenness. Billy doesn't have much on this earth. He doesn't. But one thing he had that he could give me was a beaver chew. And so, like I said, I took it home. I set it on my hearth. And for me, what this stick is, it represents a memory. It's a good memory. It's a memory of spending a number of hours with Billy up in a little pond in the mountains. I've seen Billy a lot, not long yet. He's a boy I stay in touch with. But I thought, just thinking of our journey, thinking of our lives, the older I become, and the rest of us are becoming older here. Dean, I see you got a little more gray hair than last time I seen you. But, the older I become, at least, this is something that I think about. I start looking back a lot more. I don't know if that's true for you, Mark, or some of you, but now, I mean, when I was younger, it's just life was forward. I was looking all forward. But now, I look back a lot more and think back a lot more and reflect. So today, this message, this is the last message of the year for 2020. And when you think back of this past year, I don't know most of your lives. I know very little about them. A few of you do. But if you would give me a one-word description for the year 2020, what would that be? And don't think deeply. Just call some things out. What would you think? One word that might describe 2020. I want to hear from you. Give me some words. COVID. Mm-hmm. Good. Change. What? Loss, yeah. Mm-hmm. A little louder. Flexibility, yeah. We were supposed to be flexible. Some of us didn't seem so good at that. Mm-hmm. Blessed? Good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any others? One word things you think of. That was good. I just wrote a few. Challenging, unique, disruptive. I mean, there's a lot of one words. What a year, isn't it? It's been quite a year. Back to my stick, thinking about memories, I thought, how many of you, if you had a stick sitting on your hearth for every memory, would have a hearth full of sticks? Would you? How many? I mean, kind of significant. Yeah, you just have a whole hearth sitting full of sticks. And I thought this morning at the end of this year, I mean, what do we do with these sticks? What do I do with them? What does God do with these sticks in our lives? Let's turn in our Bibles to Luke chapter 4. And we're going to read a very familiar passage. This is not necessarily a Christmas message, although maybe every message is a Christmas message. But Luke 4, and this is the place in the temple where Jesus came. He was handed the book of Isaiah to read it. Very familiar passage. We're going to start at verse 16, and we're going to read to verse 28. 16 to verse 28. Luke 4. And I'm going to be reading out of the NIV this time. Jesus returned to Galilee in the power of the Spirit, and news about him spread through the whole countryside. He was teaching in their synagogues, and everyone praised him. He went to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and on the Sabbath day he went into the synagogue, as was his custom. He stood up to read. Actually, I started at 14 there, you notice. Now in verse 17. And the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. Unrolling it, he found a place where it was written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Verse 20. Then he rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the attendant, and sat down. The eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him. He began by saying to them, "Today this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." All spoke well of him and were amazed at the gracious words that came from his lips. "Isn't this Joseph's son?" they asked. Jesus said to them, "Surely you will quote this proverb to me, 'Physician, heal yourself,' and you will tell me, 'Do here in your hometown what we have heard that you did in Capernaum.' Truly I tell you," he continued, "no prophet is accepted in his hometown. I assure you that there were many widows in Israel in Elijah's time, when the sky was shut for 3.5 years, and there was a severe famine throughout the land. Yet Elijah was not sent to any of them, but to a widow in Zarephath, in the region of Sidon. And there were many in Israel with leprosy in the time of Elisha the prophet, yet none of them was cleansed, only Naaman the Syrian." All the people in the synagogue were furious when they heard this. They got up, drove him out of the town, and took him to the brow of the hill on which the town was built in order to throw him off the cliff. But he walked right through the crowd and went on his way. The title I'm going to give for what I share this morning is 2020, the year of the Lord's favor. I'm going to look specifically, mostly today, at verse 16, and we're going to take our points that we're going to look at from that verse. Actually, verse 18. "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, and to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." For some reason, this verse really stood out to me this year. Josh had called me and asked me about possibly sharing here, and that was back in the fall. I do the year chronological Bible, and that next week I read this verse, and it was just like God said, "That's a message to share at Wilmelsdorf." For some reason, to me, different than ever before, when I read this verse this year, this verse was not just for Jews 2,000 years ago, not just for those in poverty down the street, not just for those incarcerated in prison, but this verse was for me. This verse was for me today. And so we want to look at these four points that I read here. The first one is good news to the poor. And sharing this morning, I think Tim said I might share some from the year. And yeah, that's really what it's going to be. Lisa had printed off my message and she said, "It looks like you're going to be sharing your diary from the year." And when she said that, I thought of something. I thought, you know, I don't know how many of you diary or journal, but it would be interesting to have everyone, if you journaled or diaried your year, to have them just laying up here on tables, and to just be able to go down through and read them. Like, read, what did you write down this day, that day, from this year? That would be very interesting. Around 4 years ago, I received a call from a mother of a camper, a past camper, who needed some help. And DJ was his name. I remember well the first time, and thinking of good news to the poor, that's the first point we're looking at. But I remember well the first time I drove to his home, about an hour from camp, drove into this town. And in South Carolina, most of the towns had mills, knitting mills. And in the section of the town where the mills would be, they'd have these little homes that the mills actually owned. And they tended to be poorer people. But that's where this boy lived. I drove down in the mill section of town. And as I drove down his streets, the houses just kept getting kind of more torn down, more junkier. And when I finally came up to his house, it was right almost at the end of the street. The house was just really in disrepair. I mean, I had no idea beforehand coming out to visit him. And I looked up at the house, and there was patches on the door. I mean, it looks like there was like holes through the walls, patches on the outside, on the siding. It was a high porch, and the steps had some treads and some were missing. So when I walked up the steps, I'd step on one tread and then step on the runner and then back on another tread. And that's just the type of home it was. And I got up to the door. I knocked on the door, And the door opened, and I remember stepping into this room. It was a very small living room there. And I stepped into the room, and right away I seen a blanket across like the door opening that went farther into the house. And it was a very cold South Carolina winter day. I mean, it was almost like yesterday. We don't have many days like that down there, but just windy and cold. And I came in there, and it was just cold. It did not feel warm when you came in. And I sat down on this couch, and there was this little, you know, little square ceramic heaters was just there in the corner, just purring away, kind of fighting a losing battle against the elements. And I just thought, the poorest of the poor, financially. But the gospel of Jesus Christ was very good news to this family. They were in a very helpless place. DJ came to camp, and he was just one of those boys that just soaked up the love of Jesus. He had so little in life before. And he was just, you know, living out in the woods was like, great. I mean, no problem. He had blankets tonight. He was taken care of. And he had a lot of acting out issues before he came to camp. But he's one of those boys, which there's not many like that. But when he came to camp, those acting out issues mostly vanished. He was just soaked up that love and care. But he graduated camp, went back home. He lived actually with an uncle and aunt for a little while who were believers. But eventually he went back to live with his mother again in a very poor home. It wasn't the home where he originally was in. But not going to tell you his whole story, but about exactly a year ago, I was looking in my journal just actually this morning, about exactly a year ago, I got a call from his mother, and she wondered if I could share DJ's funeral service. And what happened was he had went out on a ride one night with her boyfriend on a moped after dark, and somebody ran in the back of him, and DJ was killed. And it was a funeral service like I had never been at before. Two families. It was just a very sad, sad story. Such brokenness, such poverty, like you can't describe unless you're in a setting like that. But also just the tension, a lot of animosity between mother and father's family. It was literally a funeral service where you did not know at any time if literally people would step up and start a fight. I mean, it really actually felt like that. But it was amazing that mother stood up at that funeral, and I didn't know much of the journey the last year especially, but she stood up at that funeral next to her son's coffin, and she said, you know what, me and her father and his father, DJ's father, she said, we're just addicts. I mean, that's what she said. She said, you all know, we're just a bunch of addicts. But she went on to say, she said, you know, DJ, and I didn't know this, but she said he came home from camp. He accepted the Lord into his heart. And she said, you know, he brought, and this is my words, but he brought the presence, the peace of Jesus to our home. She said everybody who came in contact with him experienced that. And she went on to tell different stories of how that was real. Good news to the poor and others around him. And, you know, it's easy to say that family needed Jesus, right? It's easy to see that. But to be poor is to be helpless. But what about you? What about me? Have any of us felt helpless this year? Have any of us felt helpless? Maybe not poor financially, but helpless. Yeah, a lot of us have. Psalms 34:2 says, all who are helpless, take heart. Helpless is not necessarily a bad place to be. It's not helpless. For me personally, the good news of Jesus was essential for my soul, for my heart and walking the journey this year. It really was. Point number two brings us freedom to the captives. How many of you in this past year have ever felt like a captive? Have you? Maybe with work or just your freedoms. Some of you have felt like a captive. I know for me personally, that has been real. I know some of your stories a little bit. Dervin, I know some of the things you went through just physically, which was much harder than anything I faced. Lowell, I believe Lowell's in the hospital this morning, right? Just that time of quarantine. God bless him, the journey, I thought of that, just with all he faced, and then, you know, the restrictions and all that, what he must have walked through this year. This was real for me, it really was. I'm going to tell you one story in relation to that. I know most of us, At some point, it just felt like all of our planning, whatever, be it whenever in March here, it just went out the window. I mean, we had our lives planned on ahead. And for me, I did too. I'm a very plan ahead person. You know, I like to know 6 months from now, a year from now, whatever. I'm very planned ahead. And so for us at camp, specifically there with me and my role, we had planned to do a chuck wagon remodel. We had planned for a whole year about to have different groups come in and work, do all kinds of things. Our chuck wagon was built too low in the ground. Water would come in our basement. Everything was rotted out. Some of the floor, the joists, we had to dig everything out and redo a whole bunch of things on that. Or it was literally, I mean, the whole end of chuck wagon was sinking. I mean, it was literally rotting away and coming down. So we had this plan. A group from here was going to come from Wilmelsdorf, a number of other groups from Ohio, Kansas, whatever. But I remember communicating back and forth, and we knew things were a little uncertain. We had a guy come early, dug all underneath the chuck wagon out. The old foundation, me and my boys put 4x6 runners. We literally had the whole end of our building. I should have pictures for you, but standing propped up on these 4x6 runners. It might have not been quite OSHA code, but we're South Carolina. And it was just sitting there. That's where we were at. And then the group from here was going to come like a week later. Well, I remember the morning that I got the text that, you know, it's just, there's no way. It's not going to work. And I totally understood. I mean, obviously, you didn't even know if you were going to make it back to Pennsylvania if you came or anything. So many things were uncertain. But I remember that morning just feeling so alone. I mean, I was one person, and there was this whole project to do. And it was a big project. I mean, we were just tearing apart stuff and realizing that it's just gone. I mean, there's nobody planning to come to help me. And I was like, God, it's only me. And I remember that morning I picked up my Bible and I read my devotions for that morning was Isaiah 43. And it says, "Do not be afraid. I have ransomed you. I have called you by name. You are mine. When you go through deep waters, I will be with you. When you go through rivers of difficulty, you will not drown. When you walk through the fire of oppression, you will not be burned up." For me that day, that was true. I mean, this was not life or death in any way. But as I look back today, even on that situation, God provided. He did. I'll share a little more later. But it was not easy. I mean, we did not do it with a whole group from Wilmelsdorf. And we did not work from 7 to 5. I mean, it was quite a journey. And God provided. But, you know, even when I look back today, I don't understand all that. I don't. It was a very difficult time. I saw God's hand at work, but it's still hard. And, you know, even today, I can't say, oh, this is why God had this plan and it all worked out like this. No, that's not really the way it is. But I really do believe that it was God's favor to let me walk through that difficult time. It is the year of the Lord's favor. I remember sometime in that time driving, Lisa and I had traveled somewhere, and I was driving up I-26, and I looked at this billboard, and there was this big heart on it. And it said, just really simple, it said, "Love is never canceled." And I thought, man, I'll never forget that billboard the rest of my life. I mean, there's a lot of things canceled, right? I mean, some of us, like half our life was canceled through that time. But, you know, that's one thing nobody can cancel. Love is never canceled. The third area we want to look at is sight to the blind. There Jesus was among his own kindred, among his own family, his own Jewish people, his relatives. But when he brought these words, like he was the literal person who these words were written about, what did they want to do to him? They wanted to kill him. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine being that blind that they literally were there with Jesus and they just didn't see it? They never, ever saw it. But, you know, let me tell you, they and I are sometimes blind. We're very blind. Yeah, we're that blind. Another little story about a month or two ago there at camp, and we're kind of out in, it's a little more country area, but this old RV showed up. I mean, it was an ancient, I don't know how old this thing was, but it showed up sitting at the top of the hill from camp. So we drive up this hill, and it was sitting along the road, and it was just sitting there. I thought it died or something. But as I looked at it day after day, I was like, you know what? Somebody is living in this RV. There's this little AT&T kind of terminal there and pull off. And I'm like, somebody's actually living here in this RV. And there were trash bags. And it just didn't look very pretty. But I would drive by there every day, coming to camp, going from camp. And thoughts would go through my mind, thoughts about these people. Like, they sure are nasty. They're probably irresponsible people. Scummy, on the list goes. And one morning, really, I came into camp for something early. I don't remember why or what, but it was about 4 o'clock in the morning. I came in, and I drove around the corner, and your lights would kind of shine on this thing. It's just this nasty-looking camper. And this thought came to me, and it was a really bad thought. It was not a thought from God or from Jesus, but I had this thought, and I'm really even embarrassed to say it, but when the lights shone on a camper, I thought, what if I would blow my horn? I mean, seriously, like here it is, 4 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, at that moment, Jesus' Spirit spoke to my heart. Like, that's how, you know, one thought leads to another thought, to a worse thought. And I thought, here I am. You know, I'm like a missionary. You know, I work with hurting people. And day after day until I got to that place, and I thought, you know, I'm in a privilege, entitled, I'm a rich American. But I was very, very blind. I really was. And I never had even thought of loving these people. I had never prayed for them even once. And, you know, it just really hit me how I can be so blind walking through life. About a week later, I came into camp one morning, and I was just talking to the cooks there in the kitchen, and one cook was icing cookies, and she said, "Boy, here's cookies. You could take them a plate of cookies and go up and say hi to them." So how many times in this past year did you feel blind to be able to see beyond your own situation, your own stress, your own pain, whatever? That is really real. Spiritual eyesight to the blind. I was out, another illustration just hit me about a month or so ago. We live in the country, there's fields all around us, and I heard a neighbor I knew was out hunting. I heard him shoot. How many of you are deer hunters? And it was almost dark, so I texted him. I said, "Did you get him?" And he's like, "Nah, I see some blood." So I said, "Well, I'll come down." I brought one of my son's spotlights. I got down there, it was about dark, and we were looking, and it was getting less blood instead of more blood. So it was about supper time, and I said, "Well, I'm going to go up to the house and eat supper. I'll come back down, but I'll let you my spotlight." So it was pitch black by then, completely dark. So there's woods and there's fields with some cows in, so I had to walk the whole way back to the house. And I'm walking, and I can just hardly see, and all at once I came to this path. You know how a cow path, I mean, it was like a main cow path, like this wide, like this deep in the ground. And I thought, you know what? I know where that path leads. I mean, I can't see more than 5 feet in front of me, and I got a long way up over the hill, across or whatever. But I know if I follow this cow path, it's going to lead me home. And I just followed that cow path up through it, wound around, and all up the mountain. And just how life's journey, you know, sometimes, I mean, we can't see more than this far in front of our face. But we're on the path. We're on God's path. We know with faith it's going to lead us home. It really is. A while back, we were sitting at a baptismal service, and we sat behind this lady who, I know her from life's journey. She's been a missionary her whole life, her and her family, work at another camp, and she was sitting there, just her. The rest of her family wasn't there. She was there, friends of someone else, but she's sitting up there. She's probably about retirement age, about 65, and she's sitting there on this little folding chair, like one of the original, you know, all the folding chairs now, I mean, they're nice. I have a nice one with armrests and everything. But she's sitting there on this little folding chair. And I'm looking at this thing, and there's like bolts holding stuff together. The one corner, there was baler twine holding this thing together. And I'm sitting there, and some reason it just really hit me. I mean, there she is. And I looked at her, and she had a smile on her face. And at one point, the baler twine tore, and the one leg was like fixing to go. I mean, it looked like she was going to fall down. And I thought, wow. I mean, I don't know. It just hit me in life's journey. She had this glow on her face, this smile on her face that I can't describe. She has so little on this earth, but she was so rich in spirit. She was not blind. She was not blind. And I don't know, thinking of the chair made me think of even in the past journey here at Wilmot's Earth. And I don't know how many years ago, but we make this Christmas list. You guys have year after year after year loved us, supported us, and one year we have chairs. We still have those chairs, but somebody had got us folding chairs. And I just want to take this time to thank you for that support over the years. I really do. God bless you for that. Being honest this morning, and I thought, you know, I just want to be honest. These are things to be honest about. But 10 plus years you have supported us, and a lot of you are new since we were here. A lot of you probably, some of you never even saw me before this morning. And I know in talking to Dervin already, he said, you know, people have asked the question, why do we still support Phil and Lisa? And that's a legitimate question. I mean, I want you to know that that is a good question to ask, and you should ask those kind of questions. And I thought about that. I thought, what would I say? I mean, you're the giver. I mean, you give maybe for reasons you give, but what about me, the receiver? Like, what would I tell you is really, and I thought more and more, and I thought, you know, I don't have any reason to say that you should. I mean, I really don't. I don't have any reason. There's no reason I can tell you. I can't. If it would be like payment for being a pastor in the past, then that wasn't a gift I shared as a servant and pastoring here. But I thought, you know, I'd just like to say, to me, it's been a gift. And it's been a gift of love. A gift I didn't deserve, but that I can only say thanks for. And just a gift you gave unselfishly. Some of you not ever even knowing us at all. And it's a much greater gift than you could ever imagine. Many people at camp, it's not that way. They've been there longer than me, and they have no support from a church back home. So I just want to say thanks. God bless you. And we love you for that. It means a lot. Also, keep praying for us. I know we shared on praying for our future. I'm sure some, maybe many of you have heard, seeking God's path for the journey ahead. We just didn't know. We were open, God, lead us wherever you have us. I mean, if you just want us to move back home, that's fine. We're fine with that. Feeling like our time might be winding down there at camp. But it's been a journey. We at this point are planning to go to a place called Meadows of Hope, west of Lancaster. I'm sure many of you heard of that. Kurt and Teresa were a big part of founding that. And working with girls instead of boys. So maybe I'm naive, I don't know. Maybe I still have some adventure in me, but we will see. But that's what God's calling to us next. Back to our chuck wagon project and some of the things God did. You know, sometimes the littlest things are the biggest things in life's journey. Working on our chuck wagon one day, the excavator was digging out some trees, and there was a big tree went right by some water line. And when he pushed it over with his hoe, one of the roots came up and just broke the main line off. And so not that big a deal, but it was near the end of the day. So we patched it back up. I was staying later anyway for some other stuff. So I wanted to give it a long time to, it was PVC, but even give it a couple hours to dry. But I remember later that night, it was getting later in the evening. I was like, I'll just turn it on before I go home. And I didn't think nothing about it. But when I turned that water back on, I was over at a junction box. And I looked down through there, and there was like water shooting like 15 feet up in the air. I mean, just a spraying. And I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. I mean, you know how plumbing is. It's like there is always something.